Okay, I'd like to dedicate this shir for a refuah shlema for Chaya Simcha Bas Janet Jamila and Sivya Bas Yehudis, who are desperately in need of refuah shlema. Please God, this may be a merit for them. Tonight is number 45, and we are talking about the soul, inspiration and prophecy, and we are actually now going to begin talking about the prophetic experience. Let's just do a quick recap of what we did last time. We got up to page 215, and we were talking about prophecy. Now remember, this comes on the heels of what we've been discussing regarding the spiritual ability to manipulate things in the physical world, known as theurgy, right? So we talked about mysticism and sorcery and magic and all that business, and we said that that's because the soul can do stuff without necessarily using the human body as a vector. So if we want to chop down a tree, 99.9% recurring of all humanity would get a saw, chop down the tree, and that's how you do it, because that's the physical laws that we live with and the soul is bound to a human body. However, there is another way where the soul can bind an angel, let's say the angel of wind, or it can use one of God's names that binds an angel, utilizing one of God's names, etc. And that therefore can push the tree over using theurgic systems. Notice that the angel will still just blow a very, very strong wind over to knock the tree over. That's still something physical. It's still the normal way that wind does blow trees down, right? But it's now at your behest. That was the concept of theurgy, of magic, of sorcery, which we discussed at length and finished last time. But this concept of inspiration and prophecy is coming on the heels of that idea. We've said that the soul has access to the upper worlds, right? I didn't make a copy. Actually, I did. I did make copies. I think I did. So your friend asked me, do you have a copy of this?
I left this at home.
Oh, okay, fine. So you have a copy. Does everyone have a copy of this? Do you have a copy?
No.
Can I just pass this to you?
Thanks.
Is that okay?
Anyone who doesn't have a copy should at least look at the copy that I've got, which is this concept here. Good evening, Andy. The concept of the four worlds. Now, we said that the neshama has access to the bottom of the kaichas. The neshama has access to the bottom of the transcendental forces in Olam HaBriya, which is above that of the Malachim. The Malachim just deal with the kaichas. There's like a printout, and they've got it. It's like a job sheet. So it's on a pick sheet, you know. They've got to do it. That's what's given to them. That's their job. They run back and forth like electrical conductance across a nerve fiber. They just literally like train carriages on a track. And the track is the Kayach, one of the primordial forces, transcendental forces. And the Malachim are the kind of instruments, the impulses that just travel up and down like a train can't turn left or right unless the railway has been laid like that. So too a Malach can't push off unless you push him off within a particular parameter that he's allowed to shift off from. Now, if we're saying that the Neshama already has access to these koichos bits, then apart from you being able to indeterministically, bottom-up, influence them, there could also be a super-duper deterministic influence, a deterministic influence, top-down, for you. Right, give me 1 second. There's a deterministic influence, right, that can also come down. Now, we've been talking about in theurgy that if in theurgic principles I can push a tree over by binding an angel to say, excuse me, I want you to blow that tree over, even though it wasn't meant to be blown over, that's where you do something bottom up. But in exactly the same system that you can tap into that, there might be data being sent down to you top down. That is the realm of prophecy. It's the same channel. Now, what is prophecy? What is prophecy? Definition, working definition. We went round and we asked what is prophecy, and 99.9% of the people in the room got it wrong. Ronnie got it right, okay? Ronnie got it right, and he said prophecy is a higher state of consciousness. That's all it is. It is not God talking to you. It is not God sending you on a mission. It is not God revealing something to you. It is not you seeing something in the future. Not at all. Now, it might also be those things as well. But it doesn't have to be that. It's just a high. It's like literally transferring from broadband, sorry, from dial-up to broadband. We're on a very, very slow connection. Then you get BT in and they put in a new modem and suddenly you got tons and tons of data every second. And you just didn't know there was that much data that you could get so quickly. Is everyone clear about that?
Rabbi, can I ask a question, please? You mentioned that you can bottom up influence the angels to do something by calling upon them by using their name.
A seal, that's right.
Or by using Hashem's name.
That's right.
Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Just very quickly to recap, it's all in the previous downloads, but very quickly to recap, it's like this. When you use Hashem's name, it's a much more powerful override system than utilizing one of their names. They have their own individual names. What you can do is use Hashem's names, to bind angels. Now, when you do that, it's an extremely potent thing to do, and the kind of angels you can bind with that are much, 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 much higher up the chain. However, when you use Hashem's name to do that, the practitioner's input becomes vital. Who the practitioner is a key component. Using Hashem's names is basically a very strong form of tefillah, because at the end of the day, it's really asking Hashem to do it. You can't force Hashem into a corner and say, you do this. Angels you can do that with. Angels are just things. They're just like robots, as it were. They're creatures that just function. If you know how to manipulate them, how to channel them, how to change them, your incantations can bend them off of their track, which has been designed into the system. We discussed why that is. Now, the thing is, anyone can do that. Any Tom, Dick, or Harry, a witch, anyone like that we talked about, the witchcraft with the fertility medicine, anyone can do that. Anyone can do that. However, the practitioner may be causing havoc spiritually by doing that. Not that they care. When you utilize Hashem's divine names to influence the angels, that may only work based upon the fact that you're a huge tzaddik. But we also said that generally utilizing this particular path is so dangerous that generally people lose some of their lifespan doing it, because it is forbidden for a commoner to use the scepter of the king. That was what we learned out from a pasuk. Right, it's like wrong of you to like run. There was a, who was that man? I've forgotten the name of it. It was an MP, and he was in the House of Commons, and he was very, very, very frustrated with something. And he decided to walk up and he knocked the mace onto the... No, it's not the black, not the black rod. He was an MP.
Yeah.
And he took the mace, the golden mace, and chucked it onto the floor. Yeah. Oh my gosh, there was a hoo-ha. Now, at the end of the day, it's just a piece of metalwork. For goodness sake, you don't use the mace for anything. It's a ceremonial rod. For goodness sake. The point is, symbolically, what he did was astonishingly bad. I can't remember, he got into real trouble. I don't know if he had to step down, but it was like unforgivable thing to do. It was like once in history that such a disgusting thing would be done. The man in the House of Commons mid-session would take the mace and chuck it down and go, ah, oh, ridiculous. I mean, beat him up kind of thing, ridiculous. That's what's going on if you utilize divine names, unless you are holding. Okay? That answers that question.
Okay. Well, just follow on from that with another one. You've never actually, as far as I'm aware, actually discuss what the structure of an angel is.
The structure of an angel?
Yeah.
We discussed what angels are at length.
But not what they actually consist of.
I can't go into the anatomy of different angels because there's so many different types that we actually lack the lexicon and vernacular to differentiate between them, as the Rambam says. There are some angels which actually look like gyroscopes rotating within each other. Some angels have more quote-unquote human forms. The Chashmal just looks like white. In fact, Ben Yehuda, who invented Ivrit, was looking for a word for electricity. And he looked in Yechezkel and he found that there's a particular angel which looks like white flashes, because that's a particular type of angel. It sort of just looks like a white flash. So he says, oh, those angels are called Chashmal. So he says, I'm going to call electricity Chashmal. And the Rabbonim were very, very upset at the time, because he took an extraordinarily lofty concept and brought it down to a very basic physical thing in the fact that you would lose these concepts. You've got to understand, the question you just asked me is like, please could you tell me the structure of animals? A bee is an animal, except it's got an exoskeleton made of chitin. An elephant is an animal that has an internal skeleton, and it's a mammal. Now, both of those things are quote-unquote animal. Right? They're not human, and they're not plant. Okay? But the angels are so many different species, as we discussed, where they have separate subclasses, that I can't say to you, this is the angelic class. Anything which fits the angelic class in that world is called angelic. But there's so many different types, we can't go into that. It's beyond the scope of this discussion.
So some can look, take human form.
That's correct.
So the ones that actually visited Avram...
That's a whole thing with the Rambam regarding Lavush. Sometimes they come in a disguise where they look mummish like humans, like the ones who visited Avraham, and they were mistaken for Arabs. While others are extraordinarily terrifying, such as Shimshon's mother, who saw one and was absolutely terrified, where he didn't come in a Lavush, in a garb. He just was, as it were, in... I can't go into it now. Okay. I'm sorry, I can't go into it. It's really off topic. But I hope at least that was a bit of a taster to cover some of that. We're now going to... I've got my prophecy explanation kit with me. This is a very advanced kit, okay? You can get these online for £775,000, or you just can't get them. Or you could just buy some coasters and a highlighter. But these are very special. We're going to get to that. I'm very excited to show my prophecy kit because it'll explain a lot to you, hopefully. Let's start.
By the way, there were some prints runners, but none of them were.
Sorry?
There were some prints.
We're on point 4, 2:15. There it. Okay. All right. Just. Okay. Just focus. Let's do it. Have you got highlighters or pencils ready? Whatever you need. We're gonna go through it. Okay. We're gonna make some highlighting points. Very important. All right. Here we go. What is prophecy? Says the shoulder note. I like that. Let's do it. We're gonna nail prophecy. Prophecy is merely a heightened state of consciousness. But what exactly is it? Let's do it. Beyond the concept of Ruach HaKodesh and hidden influence, which we talked about at the lower levels, there is another level, however, that is much higher than divine inspiration. Much, much higher. This is the level of true prophecy. By the way, there are two levels of prophecy. There's something called Nevuah Katana and Nevuah Gadola. Minor prophecy and grand prophecy. All the prophets you hear about in the 24 books of the Bible achieved grand prophecy. But Nevuah Katana is still available today, and it's above Ruach HaKodesh. Here we go. This is the degree of inspiration where an individual, man or woman, remember we said there were 1.2 million prophets, 600,000 men, 600,000 women, excluding the 4.2 million Jews that were at the Sinai experience. Okay? This is a degree of inspiration where the individual, be it a man or woman, reaches a level where they literally highlight, bind themselves to God. That means their life forces, their life support system is unplugged, and they plug their neshama into a divine emanation. It's a system. This is fascinating, and most people are not aware of this. It's just worth coming here just to find out about these interesting things. This happens in such a way that the prophet, whoever this receptive is, can actually feel this attachment, which, by the way, is excruciatingly uncomfortable. Excruciatingly uncomfortable. The person thinks they're probably going to die. He then, it could be he or she, clearly realizes the one to whom he is bound. If someone comes to you and says, I think I might have had a prophetic revelation, you know they're talking nonsense. Someone who has had a prophetic revelation is in absolutely no doubt whatsoever as to what has occurred. He then clearly realizes, without a shadow of a doubt, the one to whom he is bound is God. He is left with a feeling that only God can generate, that the person, that the being that he is communing with is God. Only God can do that to you. There could be no shadow of a doubt anywhere. In a manner that will be discussed shortly, this is sensed with complete clarity, with an awareness that leaves no room for any doubt whatsoever. The individual is as sure of it as he would be if it were a physical object observed with his physical senses. That's a sourced point. It's like I see these candlesticks in front of me. For the people on the tape, there are two candlesticks in front of me. And there's no doubt in my mind that there are two candlesticks in front of me. There would be absolutely no doubt that I received a divine revelation. It is unquestionable. If there's any question or shadow of a doubt whatsoever, then it was not Nebuchadnezzar Nebuchadnezzar. And it probably wasn't Ruach HaKodesh either. Highlight. The main concept of true prophecy is therefore that a living person achieves such an attachment and bond with God. Stop highlighting. That is an absolute key point. I'm just going to reread that. True prophecy is therefore that a living person on this earth achieves such an attachment and bond with God. That's why God made it. God wanted the door open that should... Do you remember my Flatlanders? Way back in the annals of time, when I said that pretend that there was a 2D civilization that had length and breadth but no height whatsoever. They were totally flat and they could only move in 2D. They could only move on the levels of the compass, north, south, east, west. They can't go up, they can't go down. They're absolutely 2D and we've never experienced anything like that. And I said I wanted to talk to the people in 2D land, right? And it'd be now I'm going to just pretend I'm going to move my head down onto the bimmer here. Now, if these people inhabit this space, and I'm like, hello, Flatlanders, like that, they wouldn't be able to see me because their eyes are 2D. I'd be totally invisible to them because I'm in another dimension. What they would hear would be very odd. They'd just probably experience a force or an energy in their 2D. They wouldn't hear it the way I'm speaking because I'm shifting three-dimensional air, and their ears aren't attuned for that. So they may hear something that their 2Ds would... But it would be the voice of this being in a higher dimension. Now, what would I tell them? I would tell them there's a dimension much, much greater than your own, and I want to reveal that to you. So I say to them, listen, I can't show you how I live. I can't show you who I am because I'm on a different dimension to you. But I can trace a 2D picture, which will be, you know, one of those draftsman pictures of like a cube or something, which is like a Necker cube, which would be a 3D image. And then if they walk on the 2D image, 2D image, 2D image, 2D image, 2D image, they're going to go, whoa, hold on! This is alluding to a third dimension. Right? That's amazing. Like Einstein was doing calculus in the 14th dimension. Intense. Some people get it. Now, I want to have those guys that get it, those guys that do get it, I need a channel that I can relate to these guys on, a special channel. And if they work on their consciousness enough that they can meditate on the fact that there really is a third dimension, even though they couldn't possibly imagine, they're imagining it as much as they can with their 2D flat brains, but they're getting the idea there's something that has depth, which they've never experienced, that guy becomes enlightened. Now, if I want to schmooze with that guy, I'm going to put in a special 2D, 3D converter tube. You know, like you have digital analog converters, right? In a CD player, you put a CD in and it zips around, and that's all digital. It's just pits going 10111110011. And there's a thing in there that turns that digital stuff into a wave that can be amplified and then play Brahms or whatever it's going to be, right? So there's a digital analog converter. I've got to have a 2D, 3D converter. And that straw that I've got to that bloke there who picks up the other end, you know, like, you know, those hearing aid things, like trumpets. Do you know what I'm talking about? What are they called? Do you know what I mean? Like ear trumpets? They go, well, say that again one more time. Do you know what I'm talking about? Are you with me?
Hearing aid.
Yeah, a hearing aid.
I think that was the right word.
An ear trumpet? Yeah. Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Okay, so this bloke has an ear trumpet that he's got, and I can plug the end of my straw into his ear trumpet because he's made that, and I can communicate with him on a certain level. This is the concept of prophecy. God has left the door open for that kind of one-on-one discussion. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's an analogy, it's a metaphor. There's always problems with metaphors. Don't get lost in metaphors or analogies. Try to get the idea of what I'm talking about. Are you with me? Is everyone together? This, in and of itself, is a very high degree of perfection. Think about it. Even if he gets an ear trumpet, he's worked on himself to get an ear trumpet. and he could talk to me, should I so desire it. He could. The fact that he's even got there makes him one of the chosen few. Think about it. There's millions of these 2Ders on the Bimmer. Millions of them all walking around, going to 2D police stations, going to 2D Sainsbury's that are very flat. Very, very flat. You understand with me? You know what I mean? They're doing their shopping and they have totally flat shopping carts and their milkshakes are absolutely flat. The bubbles aren't bubbles because they're flat bubbles. They're just lines. Oh, it's weird. Think about it. But there's this one guy. He's got an ear trumpet that I could talk. He's cool. Do you hear it? He's special. He's worked on himself to be able to have that relationship. Whether or not I talk to him, he is special. Do you understand that? That in and of itself is a very high degree of affection for that person. Whether or not a prophet is getting prophecy is irrelevant. The point is he could get prophecy. That makes him or her very, very, very special and elevated. Look, if there are 600,000 prophets in Israel, we all had prophets down the street. In the old days, there was a local prophet. Did you know that? And before Shmuel, prophets were called seers. Seers. Because they were generally used to locate lost items. But the point is, you had a prophet! Your mum would say to you, I'll go down the street and ask Yechezkel the prophet where I left my glasses. Oh, I don't like going to the prophet. It's a bit freaky, I get a bit scared. Okay, alright. Yechezkel, mum sent me here, where's her glasses? I have to get into prophetic trance, I don't know. I mean, well, can you do it? Because otherwise I'm not going to have dinner. I mean, that's what prophets are. The point was, there was a prophet down the street. That's awesome. And he was, or she was, very, very hallowed by the, we're called B'nai Nevi'im. In the Sfarim, when you read Sfarim, they refer to Israel as B'nai Nevi'im. B'nai Nevi'im. Who are the B'nai Nevi'im? We're B'nai Nevi'im. Because somewhere in our family, there was a prophet. There's so many prophets. Someone's uncle's 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 cousin's 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 was a prophet. Mamish a full prophet. No, they didn't get put into the 24 books of the Bible. We'll talk about that later. But there was prophecy was a regularly common thing. There were universities. People went to prophet school. They enrolled. What? Being flippant. Okay. They enrolled in prophecy academies. With top prophets who would be the dean, and they would go through years of training. Some of them would flunk. They would just never get a prophetic experience. But they... Yes?
You said that they'd go to a prophet to find out where the glasses were. Mm. Were you being serious then?
Shmuel said, it says Re'im, they were called seers. Before Shmuel was...
It would seem...
Look, I don't know if it's just glasses. Maybe they lost their donkey or their horse, something very major. And it was a major life thing. And they would go to a prophet.
And
they
would
see,
have to go into that prophet.
Right, and he may not get anything because...
You said was excruciating.
That's it. That's exactly right. Now, the truth was the prophet would be trying to do that anyway. As we'll learn, prophets have to basically work on themselves night and day, every day, to keep up the level anyway. If they get anything through... And they sit again, they can't direct the prophetic experience. I think it was you actually last week that asked, what is the status of the prophet during it? And it's totally passive. A prophet is totally passive in the experience. So once they get the broadband, they're just receptacles. And whatever the broadband is transmitting, but they could, while they're on their open top bus going through the city, they can look for things. So if they see Shmuel's donkey is, oh, not Shmuel because then they get confused. If they see, I don't know, Shaltiel's donkey is actually over in Menachem's house while they're on that open top bus, and they can come back and relate that to them. Oh, they're saying, listen, what can I do? You're quite right. They couldn't go in and say, oh God, you know, while I'm here, where's Shaltiel's donkey? There was only one man that could do that. Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was different. He spoke to God pair al pair, mouth to mouth, literally as almost like I'm conversing with you. We'll talk about that, how that's very different. We'll talk about. I've got a whole point, a list of points as to the similarities between Bilaam and Moshe, and why we had to have a Bilaam to justify Moshe.
Avram also seems that there was a back and forth.
Again, it's difficult for me. You know what? Let me get through to it. It's a very good question as to what's the concept of dialogue. But at the end of the day, you're absolutely on the train track that God has sent you on during the prophetic revelation. That means if the prophetic revelation is talking about parrots at that particular time, that's what you're going to receive. If during that time God himself desires to speak to you, during that particular time, then of course you can maintain a dialogue with him. But that's not prophecy. That is prophecy in and of itself, but that's not what prophecy is. The fact that God's speaking to you is not... Prophecy happens even without that happening. You're just on a half state of consciousness. And when that happens, you may just see things. But if God decides, while you're in that state to relate to you directly, he may do so. He's free to do that at that time because you've got to that particular state where he can do that without killing you, as it were. Do you get what I mean? That doesn't mean that's what will happen during your prophetic revelation. Yeah. Is that you feel clear with that answer? Well, he's going to say it black and white in a much better way than I'm describing it.
Can I just ask you, presumably this isn't the way people go to Gadolim and ask them what should they have the operation and ask them questions.
No.
Presumably then they're just looking
Today, when we ask Das Torah, yeah. Literally knowledge of Torah, we're asking someone who's closer to Torah than we are.
But it's not this source, it's completely different.
Absolutely not. I don't go to prophets and say, listen, should I ask for prophetic revelations? Unfortunately, we don't have access to that today.
But everybody does go to all the Gadolim Hador and ask...
Let me answer your question. Yeah. Your question is that the answer to your question is we seek people who are closer to Torah because their understanding and their wisdom is higher, more refined... and better than what we can get learning on the street, which any Tom, Dick and Harry can get. Common sense, everyone should know the difference between good and bad. A Gadol truly understands the fine line between important and more important.
So it's not this?
It's not this. Not this. Okay, that's a section 4 thing.
Just drawing that together with what you said before, you said that during the state of prophecy, a person is calm while they're receiving it.
No, I never said that. I never said they're calm. I said they feel as if they're dying.
No, that's the pain of the dvekus, which gets them to that space, doesn't it?
No, I never said that. You're saying that.
Yeah.
And you're getting it wrong.
Right.
Okay? I never said that. Let's continue, yeah?
As they get the closeness to Hashem, it's an uncomfortable thing.
I can't, again, let's read it inside. I'm on page 215, last indent. Last two words on the line. This in itself is certainly a very high degree of perfection. If they've got the ear trumpets, if they're already on the level where they could talk to me, they're really great people. Besides this, however, it is also often accompanied by certain... I've added in two words. I'm adding in two words. I think it's very important that at least you put this in like a little bracket kind of thing. In between the words certain information, I'm adding in the words transmission of. Just to clarify that. It is also often, but not necessarily, accompanied by certain transmission of information and enlightenment. But that is not a necessity or fundamental to the prophetic experience. The prophetic experience may contain no information whatsoever. You just see a beautiful vista which was completely beyond you. You're seeing things which you don't understand. You're having a prophetic revelation. There may be no information transmitted to you directly at all. But there may be. There may be. It could be this guy with the ear trumpet just putting his ear to see what I'm talking about. Well, I'm talking about something with Dovi, whatever about that, and he overhears it. But then I say, oh, while I'm here, I want to talk about Pete. Pete is the 2D guy with the ear trumpet. Pete! Okay, Pete, Oh, it's okay. Pete, I want you to go down the road and I want you to do this for me. Okay? That's something specific for Pete. Through prophecy, one can gain knowledge of many lofty truths among God's hidden mysteries. Because it's not bound by you having to look through a microscope or telescope to ascertain it. God is just giving you the data on a far higher level. You can't ascertain that level of data just through scientific awareness alone. These things are perceived very clearly, just like all knowledge gained through bestowed enlightenment, as discussed above, because it's coming through a different channel. There's no suffix, there's no doubt anywhere. I don't have to validate the data, because I'm not sure, maybe there was an error bar, because maybe my you know, you've got the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. It's a very, very interesting principle. The Heisenberg uncertainty principle in quantum mathematics explains as follows. When you're trying to measure something, the very act of measuring it actually precludes you from understanding it. A very common form of that is something known as the observer effect. Does everyone here have a car or access to a car? Most people? Have you ever tried to put air in your tyres?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, Sometimes you have a gauge which tells you what the bar is, what PSI, pounds per square inch is of your tar. Let's say you need to fill up 32 pounds per square inch. I'm just plucking that out of the air. It's a random number. Could be close to what you need in your tyres. 32 PSI, let's say. Now, you want to put a gauge on the tyre to see how much air there is in your tyre. Yeah, is that what you with me so far? Now, as I put the gauge on, you hear this. That was pretty good, wasn't it? Hopefully that'll come out of the tape. Now, it's a very small amount, but you don't really know how much air was in the tyre. Because the very method of you trying to find out how much air there was has changed the reality of what there was previously. That's called the observer effect. And therefore, the uncertainty principle is, whenever I measure something, I'm always somewhat uncertain because the way that I'm measuring might affect the actual cause. That's a standard, that's a very, very important thing in quantum physics. Very important concept, the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Now, you don't get that with prophecy. With prophecy, God will tell you there is exactly this amount in that tyre. Because he isn't bound by the limitations we're bound by. Is that clear? So a lot of people argue, what about the Heisenberg uncertainty principle? I get that a lot. No, really. And you know what they, you know what people are hopping onto? The word uncertainty. They like the idea that in maths there's a concept of absolutely law of uncertainty, and therefore maybe there's not a God. That's what they're hopping onto. They don't understand the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. It actually just shows the frailty of humanity and the strength of God. Humanity can't ever know anything properly, absolutely. Doesn't mean God can't. All right. Oh. Prophecy, however, comes with a much greater force than divine inspiration. Divine inspiration is already a very vivid experience. I mean, you are overcome with divine inspiration. But prophecy almost kills you. We're going to explain this. Okay, now I've got to use my magic prophecy kit.
Is it really magic?
No, it's not magic and it's not prophetic, but it is a kit, kind of.
Wait, go on, do that. Just
yeah, go for it, Andy. It's going to be a good one.
I don't understand it, but it's clearer. You're closer to Hashem. You're in heightened awareness.
Heightened level of consciousness.
Heightened level of consciousness. And that comes from you being close to Hashem. It's
yes.
One and same thing.
Yes.
When we talk about Olam HaBa and you know, the world to come, part of our benefit is that we are closer to Hashem.
Psh, true.
But at the same time, so isn't this a sort of a, some sort of a reward? Isn't it an equivalent? Is it like a foretaste of the world to come or a slight taster?
Let me explain. It's a beautiful, beautiful, exquisite question. Kind of horror. Andy asks good questions. He always has done. It's like this. Andy's saying, if really Olam Haba is closest to God, and you're telling me prophecy is a heightened state of consciousness, isn't that really reward?
Yeah.
Which really means you're getting a bit
taking
of...
something away from this.
It's like this. It's profoundly different. In Olam Haba, you'll be walking around in a physical body, experiencing the power and intensity of Hashem. You have to have a physical body, because there'd be no Olam Haba without it. We discussed that in section one. There's no, it would be unfair. You have to have all that revelation, all that closeness, being on a normal level. With no Yetzer Hara, because that would get in your way. No evil in the world, it's a different arena. Here, the prophet is breaking himself to the point of death just to be a passive recipient of some information. That is extremely different to the Olam Haba experience.
So he's separating the spiritual and the physical. And that's maybe where they
came from. I don't know whether or not you want to say that. The point is it's a profoundly different experience. Mm. Profoundly different. Can I use my kit?
Yes, sorry.
Do I have permission?
Yes, sir.
Okay, this is how we're going to do it. How many have we got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. I'm going to do it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, this is how we're going to do it. Can I ask you to hold this, please? You get a power slinky, regular slinky, super slinky, hybrid slinky, extra slinky, heavy bottom. that's not a personal... these are guitar strings. These are guitar string gauges. Now, what I'm going to need is I'm going to need an object for you to prophesy about. Dovi's the absolute top of the chain. So the object that Dovi is going to prophesy about, this is very, very important. Okay, this is really important. He is going to prophesy... I don't know whose gloves these are. He's going to prophesy about this box of tissues. That's what's going to be, okay?
So Dovi, could you... This is going to be the prophetic actual data.
Okay, and here's the prophet. He's a Stabilo boss marker. This is my prophet. This is my... His name's Stabilo. How do you pronounce this, by the way? Is it Stabilo boss? Stabilo. Stabilo, right? Stabilo boss. He's the prophet. Now, this has going to work.
I need you to... This is the prophetic image. This is the data that God is projecting. He's talking about a tissue box. This is a lens the dog is going to have, and that lens is going to be projecting to Adrian's lens, which is regular slinky yellow. That's going to shoot a laser beam over to Leon's lens, who will shoot over to Howard's lens, and then Howard will be shooting over to Andy's lens. Andy's lens will be shooting over to Clive's lens, and Clive is going to be pointing towards this, who is the prophet himself. Okay? Now, each one of these lenses in Aramaic is called an aspicularia. An aspicularia, it's like a lens. Now, there are lots of different types of lenses. Ever been to a fairground where they have those funny lenses, those mirrors, and they go, distortion mirrors, and you stand there and your head goes, and I'm talking about, cool, the mimes I do for you people. It isn't easy. So I said, what are you going to do tonight? I'm going to go, and the base manager is trying to explain God consciousness to people. I know. But I'm trying, guys. Now, those lenses are all different. They may have different thicknesses. They're different optical clarity. Some may be extremely dull and thick and hardly any light gets through. Some may be optically perfect. Some may distort. Now, God decides that he wants to reveal himself to Mr. Stablo Boss over here. Because Mr. Stablo Boss has got to the level of prophecy, okay? He's a prophetic marker. Okay, that's what he is. You with me so far? You with me, yeah? Now, how does he do it? Can I just take this with me? Because I'm going to be walking around. How does he do it? Okay, this is how he... It's ridiculous. Come on. Asher, this is how he does it. So God has projected this concept of a tissue box right here. That tissue box then is going to be beamed with light into Dovi's first aspicularia. Now that aspicularia, which is an angel, a form of angel, which takes the form of a tea coaster that is advertising guitar string gauges, and that shoots through to now. Already by the time it's got to Dovi's, it's changed. This, we're talking about a tissue box. This is the prophetic revelation, right? This is the prophetic revelation. So that's hit that. It's already gone through this lens, and something's already changed about it. It's being lensed. You know, when you look through glasses, not exactly the same, you know what I mean? It's already gone through a change. That then gets shot to another lens, and it changes again a bit. Then it gets shot over to Leon, and Leon has got it at an angle because we're gonna bend the light around. But we're still really thinking about the tissue box. Then I get shot through Howard. Now, Howard is going to have an even greater change. Then Andy's gets shot. Then we're going to go through there. And then Clive is going to be projecting to Mr. Stabler Boss. Now, the problem is Mr. Stabler Boss has a removable head. And this removable, head is to symbolize that the last aspicularia, the last glass, the last lens is Stabilo Boss's aspicularia. He has it, which means no two prophets can prophesy the same. We're talking about a tissue box. That's really what it is. Dovi's the first in line, which means Dovi's got the clearest revelation of the tissue box. Then we've got two. Let's say we have another marker, also Stabilo Boss, but he was green. Different, you know, ethnicity. There's the greens, there's the yellows. The yellows generally make the greens feel bad about being green, and green feel as if they're greens of colour. Know what I mean? I can't believe I'm discussing this. But you get what I mean. There's Mr. Green Stabilo Boss, there's Mr. Yellow Stabilo Boss. Yeah? Now, Mr. Green Stabilo Boss and Mr. Yellow Stabilo Boss will both be getting their vision of the tissue box through Clive's last aspicularia. Are you with me? But the consciousness of Mr. Yellow Stabilo Boss, because he grew up in the Western world with a very privileged upbringing, is very different to Mr. Green Stabilo Boss, who grew up in Eastern Africa with no formal education. But they're both receiving from that same aspicularia that Clive is holding, which is bending all the way through Andrew, through Leon, through Adrian, through all the way back to the fish box. Are you with me so far? That's a system. That's a system. Now, imagine the particular aspicularia. the last Aspaclar I've hit, they both wake up from a frigid trance, and their students say to them, oh, stable, blah, blah. They're in different countries. Physicality is irrelevant here. They're both on the high level of consciousness. They're tapping in. This guy is in London, and this guy's in East Africa. You with me so far? Oh, he's orange now. This guy's in East Africa, you know what I mean? It can happen. There was an orange one too. Don't pick me up on that. Don't pick me up on that.
Oh, you said it was green.
You're getting lost in it. Now, this guy wakes up in East Africa, and this guy... I'm trying. Do you feel as if I'm trying? No, not really. Whoa, whoa, whoa! Don't, I'm in the middle! Hold on! Well, hold on! See, these two guys wake up, and all those students are with them, and they go, oh, great prophet! What did you see? Now, really, what we're talking about here is a tissue box. That's what I'm talking about here. And one person says, I saw a sea of white, beautiful white, unending, and it was slightly see-through, and there was a pattern on it. Would that be accurate? Absolutely, he's discussing a tissue. While the other guy says, I saw an oblong that was bleeding white blood. So now, those Talmidim meet up in Norway at a prophetic conference that was being held at the local trade fair centre. No, the Novotel. The prophetic centre. I'm trying, work with me. Now they said, what did your prophet master see? Oh, my prophet master saw a sea of white foam. A sea of white foam. And they said, what did your master see? My master saw something very different. He saw a massive giant oblong that was bleeding white blood. They go, well, that's interesting. The white blood is obviously the same, but it's a very different prophetic revelation. No! That's because their last Aspaclarias were picking up, their consciousness was focusing in on, do you understand what I'm saying? Like if it was a watch that we were talking about and it's got a red second hand and you looked at it very, very closely and someone said to you, what do you see? You'd say, I saw a red line of fire moving across the sky. And another person would be like all the way back and say, I saw a wristwatch. But they're both getting the data from the same thing. The kasher is though that some of these lenses might be magnifiers. Some of these lenses might actually make something look as if it's further away. It depends on the lens set. It depends on the lens set that's being used at that particular time. Different angels are used for different lens sets.
So you're saying the lens sets are different?
No, in this particular example, they aren't, but they could be. For different prophets at different times, the lens sets are reorganized. You've got like a frame, as it were, like with a, and you can put different lenses in. Some lenses are all perfect. All perfect, like optically perfect, and some are rubbish. Right, they're like, fum, 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 oh, what have I got? Fum, you know what I mean? They're like really, really not good. And now, the person seeing is seeing true prophecy at the end, but one has become very dulled and magnified out of proportion. They're seeing the real deal. They're seeing the tissue box at Dobby's end, but what they're saying of it, what they can receive of it, is extremely limited to someone else. Now, it could be all those lenses are great, but this lens, his consciousness needs work. This is just as much one of the lenses as anything else. And it could be both of them are seeing that it transmitted through this particular lens, perfectly clear, optically perfect. And because the guy in East Africa has a much higher level of consciousness than the guy in London, he's getting more of a revelation of this tissue box. It depends on them as well. Which is why, when they would prophesy and write about it, they would say so in totally different ways. You won't get two prophets that say exactly the same thing. Because their Aspaclaria is different. So as they relate the method to you as to what they're explaining, they intrinsically have to see it differently.
Can you explain to me what the difference is between that concept of different people seeing the same thing different, like two people seeing a car crash, explaining it's the policeman, both concepts will be totally different, from that concept to being... The Jewish mysticism concept that you're discussing, is it not the same thing?
No. There's an object here which is being lit up by laser light, passed through different mirrors and lenses,
and the person that's receiving it is going to only receive the data one of through reflections, starting at Dovey's end, which would be the closest reflection, then all the way through to Clive's end, which is the furthest reflection, and the data that's coming through is whatever they can peep through in a periscope. Their mind, it can't be their eyes that peep through at it, it's their consciousness that peeps into the periscope. They don't see it with their eyes, they see it with their mind's ability. The more developed their consciousness, the more they can receive through the periscope. But all you're getting through the periscope is a reflection of a reflection of a reflection of a reflection. That's why, have you ever heard the term, what does the Torah say when they hear a voice from heaven that calls out? Do you know what the Torah calls it?
Bas kol.
A bas kol. Can you translate that for me? Daughter of a voice. Literally. We say it's a heavenly... It's a daughter. It's an echo. It's an echo. Because it's, what we're saying is it's an echo of an echo of an echo of an echo of an echo. It's a lens from 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 a lens and a lens. And all I'm looking at is what's technically an echo.
Why so many lenses? Why can't it just be one lens shining on just down for people, for different pockets to pick up?
You can't reach that level of consciousness. You have to have layers to transduce the original art concept down to the human consciousness.
And where are they positioned in the four worlds?
The world of angels. So the lenses are the world of angels.
So through the forces.
Yes, through the angels down to the to John standing at the bottom with Bob the Mallard.
But I thought that you said that we could inter.
No, that's at the beginning. I'm saying that you could have connection to the Koichos. Right. That's how we could have that. But this is how the system of prophecy works. Right. Richard, you got a question?
Just quickly. When you said the people receiving have different consciences, are you saying that is based on their level of righteousness? That's the difference?
Well, look, they've got to be righteous enough to get to the level of prophecy. But obviously their level of refinement and knowledge and ability will still be different between the two. Two righteous people aren't the same people. Mm. So they've obviously got to get enough to get into the club. But there's different members of the club.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember when I was doing Kung Fu in Golders Green, there was a knight for all the regular degrees. That's white up to brown. White up to brown. Now the black belts will turn up to that as well. But then there was another knight just for the black belt guys. Now, copying karate, even though Dan is a Japanese word, actually, copying karate, there were levels of black belt. So there was first Dan, second Dan, third Dan, fourth Dan. It was a fourth level. We used to call it fourth level. So these black belts were like, you know, master, grandmaster and stuff like that. There's only one grandmaster that came from China once to the Harrah Leisure Centre. I remember meeting him and stuff like that. Once you're in the black belt club, that's not the end of it. That's not the end of it. You keep going. So these guys are black belts. That doesn't mean that their black belts are all on the same level. This guy's a seventh Dan black belt, you know what I mean? And the other black belts who are like pretty cool to everyone else are like, whoa, are you seventh Dan? You know what I mean? Can I continue? Point five, to page 217. This is vital to understand about this thingy, about the aspeclaria, the mats. If you can highlight, the experience of prophecy must come about through intermediaries. It must. There is no other way. It has to come about through intermediaries. God cannot reveal himself absolutely directly to that individual. That's the end of the highlighting. Man cannot, underline the word cannot. This answers Clive's question. He cannot attach himself directly to God's glory and perceive it, that is a capital I, by the way. That's not a small case I. Perceive it as one sees a man standing in front of him. It doesn't work like that. That's not how the system's made. The perception of God involved in true prophecy must therefore come about through God's servants, the Malachim, whose task it is to provide such a vision. That's the job. These intermediaries then act as lenses through which one sees the glory. What a prophet actually perceives, however, is the glory itself. That's what's coming through the lens is obviously a reflection of the original object, in this case, the tissue box. It is really still a tissue box and not something else. It is as if he sees a parrot. Well, but what happened to the tissue box? No, you'll get the data originally. The way one sees it, however, depends on the particular intermediary involved. Just as one would see through a lens, would depend on the particular type of lens, aspiclaria. I've written in concave, convex, translucent, etc. Depending upon the optical properties, as it were, of that lens, will bend or change or manipulate that particular image that you're looking at it through, to the point that you will not see an exact representation, but you'll see it itself is being put through that, but it's being bent by the lens. There are therefore many degrees of perception depending on the lens, or lenses, I would say, involved. It may cause the subject to appear far away, like some lenses do that. Some lenses make things look very, very far away. If you turn a pair of binoculars around the wrong way and you look through the other end, have you ever done that? Then the thing looks really far away, right? That could be that's what that lens is doing. Or it could look extremely close. You could be looking through, you know, a microscope aperture, an objective of a microscope, and you just see, whoop, you just, you know, all you see is like, you know, a picture, that you just see the picture of the tissue box, which is on the actual tissue box. But, you know, you don't see the whole tissue box because you're looking at it too closely because the lens did that. There are therefore many degrees of perception depending upon the lens involved. It may cause the subject to appear far away or very close. There can furthermore be various degrees of transparency, optical perfection, or opaqueness in the lens itself. It may be that's a dirty piece of glass. And what you're seeing through it is occluded and clouded by the aspiclaria itself. That particular angel is holding back some of the data. So what's coming through is filtered. This is awesome. This bit's awesome. When God reveals himself and bestows his influence, he doesn't have to do that. The prophetic revelation, he's got to the level of consciousness anyway, where he's now graduated to the level of being a prophet. He's getting data on that stream. When God desires to reveal himself and bestow his influence, a prophet is greatly overwhelmed. His body and all of his limbs, once he hits this level of consciousness, immediately begin to tremble, and he feels as if he's being turned inside out. You can correlate that can you just make a note saying see page 239.3 over there in that little gap there, they have become dependent. Yeah, it feels as if he's being turned inside out. Can you see that? Can you just say, see page 239.3? Can we just jump to page 239.3 and get your highlighters ready? So we're now jumping to chapter 5, page 239, bottom of the page, point 3. We're jumping. I'm just going to highlight this first sentence, if you don't mind. If you have a highlighter, do highlight it. When the influence of a prophetic experience begins to be felt, it causes the recipient to become mentally and physically incapacitated. Could you write in a cross-reference, see page 217.6, which is where we are. It's the same concept, okay? These are sourced concepts. This is a standard thing in the Jewish faith as to how prophecy actually happens. Back to page 217.6, second indent. This, however, is the nature of the physical. Why is that happening? Physicality simply can't deal with that level of data of broadband. You know what's happening? You're bursting broadband data through a 56K dial-up modem. You're frying the circuits. You don't upgrade your body when you become a prophet. Your body's still your body, which is used to walking around and living on the regular physical humdrum of life, and I don't know, doing your taxes. It's your body. If you get to the level of being a prophet and your consciousness is very, very developed, don't expect your feet and elbows to go along with you. They're your feet and elbows. They're genetic. They're physical. They're animated clods of earth. If you become overwhelmed by this data, your body still has to deal with that. Now, your body is not designed to deal with a super consciousness. It's designed to deal with a human consciousness. You stuff a super consciousness in, and it's literally, it's not short-circuited. too much current is being passed through resistors and components that are not designed to handle such an amount. They just aren't. It's like, you know what? It's like plugging in a appliance designed for American 110 volts into a British 240 volt without using a step down, transformer. It just fries it. The body literally feels as if it's going to die. It cannot take that level of revelation.
It's maybe a silly thing to say, but doesn't that go against the whole premise of creating God giving good to another?
What, he's not allowed to set any level? The level really was set by us when Adam and Rishon sinned. But the point is, of course he's giving good to another. What, there's no level? There's always going to be a level where man would be fried by too much God. Yeah. And whatever level you put him on, he's never going to get to God himself. It's impossible. So you can never call that creation so close to Hashem. There's always going to be another level higher. And that will always fry him. Once he's limited by a physical body, there's going to be a limitation. All right. This, however, is the nature of the physical. It simply cannot tolerate the revelation of the spiritual. I heard from my David Kaplan a very interesting thing. He said, as you go up in the body, the organs which are further up the body are more spiritual. And there's an angel associated with each part of the physical body. It's talked about in Sefer Yetzirah. The angel of death is associated with a part of the body. And that's the slough of skin on the heel. The heel of the foot. Why is that? Because it's already dead. You have dead skin that you walk around with on the bottom of your heel. And that's its chelek, that's its portion in your body. The heel of the foot is the area which is associated with the angel of death. He gets rights, as it were, and that truds through the filth of the streets. Now, as you go up your body and further and further and further up, the organs become more and more and more important. You notice that? That's a very interesting thing, right? Evolutionarily, I don't know how you can say that. You know, well, you know, there was snake debunkings on the leg. And we had to put our brains up top. Ridiculous. Anyway, I could go off there for hours, but you know what I'm like. So I won't do that. So anyway, the knees aren't as important as the hips. And the hips aren't as important as the guts. And the guts aren't as important as everything in the thoracic cavity. Your liver, your spirit. I mean, the more that you go up, the more you need it. You know what I mean? Now, up above the heart, which is vital, you've got the head. And the brain, obviously the top of the brain, which is the height of man's consciousness, is right at the very, very top of the cerebral cortex. If you look through a brain, the bottom of the brain is less important than the top part of the brain, not for so much for biological function, but for consciousness. The bottom of the brain, the medulla oblongata, which is the top of the spinal column, deals with heart rate and things like that. And the cerebellum, which is the hind brain, deals with things like balance. And then the top brain deals with thought processes. Who you really are is further up at the top. He said an interesting thing to me, Rabbi Dovid Kaplan said an interesting thing to me. The more spiritual something is, the less it can tolerate the physical. Let me explain that. It's a very, very important point. Very important point. If I put a hair in your sock or tights, I put a hair in the body tights and you put your foot in it, and that hair is rubbing up against the bottom of your heel. Will anyone be bothered by that? You probably won't even know about it until you take off your sock or tights and go, oh look, there was a hair in there, right? Now try to live as a normal person with a nice big fat hair stuck in your eye. You are ice mensch. You can't function. You'll be like this the whole time. Oh my gosh, you know what I mean? One hair! You are not a functioning human being. You cannot function. The eyes are very, very spiritual compared to your toes. One strand, one grain or speck of sand in your eye, you cannot function. The brain can't even deal with blood. The brain has to be insulated from the contact. It can't even deal with blood. It can only deal with the purest fluid in the body, cerebrospinal fluid. Just an incredibly pure water-looking like substance. There's a blood-brain barrier in the meninges. It just simply can't even have anything to do with the blood. It is so elevated and lofty. Your ankle will take anything you throw at it. Blood, I don't know, crocodile skins, lemons, peanut butter. Smear it with peanut butter, no problem at all. Take a little dollop of peanut butter and throw it in your eye, or up your nose. You will not be a functioning human being until you clean that out. Physicality is intrinsically allergic to spirituality, and spirituality is intrinsically allergic to physicality. That's the dichotomy of man. Man is weird in the fact that he's an ape stuffed with a transcendental soul, a soul higher than the Malachim, the end of the Kaichas. It's ridiculous. It shouldn't work. Indeed, it shouldn't. God made it like that. Section 1. Is everyone with me so far? It cannot tolerate the revelation of the spiritual. And this is particularly true when it consists of the revelation of God's own glory. Look, there's spiritual and there's like ridiculous, okay? You want to reveal to me an angel or something like that, I'm going to be like overwhelmed. I'm not going to be like right for a week. God himself reveals an image of that tissue box through the prophetic revelation to me. It's like literally to the point of death. You understand? It's too intense. The prophet's senses shut down. They cease to operate. And his mental faculties, or her mental faculties, simply can no longer function independently. They're out for the count. They have all become dependent on God directly and the influx that is being bestowed. I've written in here, they're short-circuited to the Ribbono Shel Olam. When you're having this Aspaclaria revelation that's going from Dovey through to Clive, part of the system is, why do they feel as if they're being turned inside out? Because they literally have to undo their life processes. God has to take control and say, now you are on this level. You know what? I remember I can tell you something from my own personal anecdotal. That means I'm going to go off. When you hear it again, I'm coming back. I had to have major surgery a couple of years ago. And I had to walk myself. I just walked into the theatres. I was dressed in blue and had a hat on and stuff. And I was taken through to the theatres. I was walking about, you know. And then I had to actually get to the theatre itself. And I walked in and there was the anaesthetic room, which is the bay, which is adjuncted to the actual theatre itself. And it was major surgery and I was really nervous, right? And they said, right, okay, you know, we want you to get onto this bed and just talk to us. Now, unfortunately, I got up there a bit early because I was very punctual. And there was two ladies who were the anaesthetists. And one lady, I still to this day do not know what she was doing, was emptying a little bottle about that big into a syringe over here with a needle this long. Now, who needs a needle that long? Dr. Sid would be here and tell her, obviously, that needle was, because Dr. Sid's an anaesthetist, and he would say, this needle was that long. Okay, and she was turning upside down as she was doing that. I go, hi. I was like, what are you going to do with that? It will go through me. It's wider than my body. Go, boop, boop, boop. It'll make a kebab out of me. What are you doing with that? I was like, hello. So what's that? So I don't know, the needle's at the best times, but that's a corker. So she said, oh, don't worry about that. Jump on the bed and start talking to us. So I was like, okay. So I was like, And they're just rolling out, prepping my hand, and they're going to stuff an end onto it. Just talk to us, just talk to us. So I was like, okay, what do you want to talk about? So they said, just talk to us, we don't care, because we're just going to wait for you to conk out. So I was like, okay. Now, why did I have to go through that process? Because I simply couldn't survive the process of being operated on in that way without that anaesthetic. The pain would be too much for me. You're going to chop me up, right? You can't just chop someone up like that. I mean, they'll pass out, they'll faint, their process. They need to be anaesthetized, semi-comatosed. You put them there and then you can deal with them. You put life support in and you just got to take over, right? And for that time, the anaesthetist was keeping me alive physically. Yeah, obviously God's keeping me alive. You understand the concept, right? They've got a tube down my throat and they're like monitoring my heart rate and they're twiddling with their buttons, all the drugs going in and making sure that I was alive. You know what I'm saying? I have to go through that process in order to have that operation. Because the operation is too intense for my physicality to maintain through that in any other way. Do you understand what I'm saying? Is that a good analogy? Okay, end of analogy. I'm back. Back to what we're talking about. When a prophet hits the status where he is literally or she is literally ready to communicate with God in this way, God is going to give over data to this prophet. You have to go through an anesthetic bay. You have to give it up. You have to say, I'm now going to give up my life force to you. You're going to have to put a tube down my throat, as it were. Put me on a life support system. Put those beep, beep, you know, things on the fingers and stuff. You have to do that because I'm not going to be able to take this. So the furthest the prophet himself can push himself to is the anesthetic bay. Then when they wheel him into theatre, he's already out. You know what I mean? They have to pick him up and put him on the operator. He's gone. Gone, right? He's like, eh. But he did that voluntarily, Jack. It's an elective procedure. He did it voluntarily. Are you with me? The prophet has to voluntarily give up his life force to God. God then has to be the doctor, as it were, put the life support spirituality systems into all parts of his body and keep him or her alive during the operation, during the procedure. Are you clear with that? It has to be the way. Because there's no way they can survive without it. The mere act of prophecy will kill an individual. When Moses turned around to God and said, look, we're now on really good terms. Show me your God. I really want to see it. Gloves off. Show me what's going on. He said, no man can see me and live. It doesn't work like that. You can't. It's like saying, you know, let me walk through fire and mat. You can't do that and still remain. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Is everyone totally solid with that concept? As a result of this attachment of the neshama, now let's just have a look at the soul picture. He's Dafka's saying, remember, we've got anatomy of the soul here. We have the guf at the bottom, which is the body. Then we have the nefesh bahamis, which is the animal soul, which is genetically encoded and responsible for our consciousness. The top of the nefesh bahamis is the nefesh hasichlis, which is the intelligent component of our animal brain that chimps and dogs and dolphins also share. It's just ours is very developed. And that's all genetic. The next level up is the ruach, which is the spirit of speech, which gives us the ability to speak. And the next level up, just trying to see which one I've got here. I want to give you one. The next level, do you have one of these? Can I give this to you? Then the next level up, okay, is the neshama. Sorry, you want one as well, don't you? I'm running out of them. Give me a minute. Yep, I got one for you. Then the next level up, is the neshama. Now this neshama is the bridge between between the upper and the lower spiritual world. The neshama is spiritual, but it has access to the chaya in the yechida, which is the life force of the neshama and the individual fingerprint of the neshama. Now it's the neshama bit which gets involved at the level of prophecy. That means obviously the chaya and yechida are involved. It's impossible they can't be involved. But it doesn't go down to ruach and nefesh bahamis. They will get the data when the neshama comes back to normal when the prophet arises back in a normal waking state. But that neshama is connected to the chaya and yechida, the yechida being the bottom, being the outcrop of the koichos. I'm talking mechanically here how this is working. Is everyone with me? Andy, Howard, Leon, is everyone with me? Mm-hmm. Are you with me? Richard, do you feel comfortable with exactly which bits are going where? We're talking mechanically here, like electronics. Yeah? Now he says the neshama, he actually says the word neshama. Because the soul can mean anything, can mean any one of those six components. As a result of this attachment, the neshama, it gains a degree of enlightenment completely beyond the powers of human reason. Because you're going into the mainframe. You're hacking into the network. You're up into the mainframe of the universe. Outside of physicality, you're literally hanging around beyond the Malachim. The Malachim can't get in there. But the human soul is part of it, so it can. So you're literally data sharing with the absolute core. This enlightenment does not come to it, the neshama, because of its own nature, but as a consequence of the fact that the highest root is bound to it. The yechida is bound to this data. The soul therefore perceives things in a much higher manner than it can ever attain by itself. It's literally being elevated up to a special level of security clearance where it is getting top secret data that is so classified. You know, there are many, many levels of top secret, way beyond top secret. There's crypto, high levels.
Top secret atomic.
Beyond that, the highest possible level is only awarded to certain individuals only for certain periods. And that's called cosmic. Cosmic clearance is total clearance to look through everything whenever they want. And even though there are levels, there's C1, C2, and C3. And C3, when it's granted by government to individuals, is only granted for a window. So if you're given cosmic clearance, there are no secrets. Anything you look at is available. But when you're looking at that, you've got a window of opportunity of how many weeks that, you know, the government has said, look, you need to get this job done. So we're going to give you cosmic clearance. You've got a week to do it. And then the cosmic clearance will automatically close and all those files will be locked again. It's called cosmic clearance. It's beyond top secret. It's like, it's really rare. It's like top ministry officials may get it for a certain period of time in order to deal with a certain thing. Looking back into files that have been closed for 60 years and stuff like that, which, you know, Denver didn't even know they existed. They have access to it for a window. That cosmic clearance is what's happened during prophecy. The soul therefore perceives things in a much higher manner than can ever attain by it. It's been given cosmic clearance. One who's attained the level of prophecy is on a higher level than the one who has attained the level of divine inspiration, which is a lower level of this kind of procedure. It doesn't use aspiclaris in the same way. Even with respect to his grasp of knowledge, when he wakes up, the way that he grasps knowledge is far higher than the way had he have just received divine inspiration, or Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh doesn't give over the same amount of data. You're dealing with a far purer form of data transfer. This is so because, highlight, prophecy brings man to the greatest degree of enlightenment that is possible for a human being. That's it. There is no higher a human being can achieve than the prophetic revelation in consciousness terms. This is it. This is to the point of death. This is so conscious that any drop more will kill the practitioner. It is the highest possible revelation that can possibly exist for a human being. With these two deers who are living on the Bimah, it's the highest I could give him without plucking him out of his 2D world and killing. He will cease to exist in 2D. And what the other two deers that are left on the Bimah will think, he's dead. He died, he disappeared.
Is this the level of prophecy that the 4.2 million Jews at Mount Sinai went into?
What a good question. Adrian is asking from the left, look, we all know that when God spoke the first two commandments, everyone died each time. So he spoke, they died, he had to resurrect them. Then they got up, he spoke the second one, they died, they resurrected. They said, enough! We can't take this level of revelation anymore. Moses, please will you go and get the rest of the Torah for us? And we will listen to you. The word Torah means what?
Teaching
or law. Every Hebrew word has a gematria, has a numerical, the numbers and letters are the same thing in Hebrew. What is the gematria of the word Torah? 611. Excellent. How many mitzvahs are there in the Torah? 613. The Torah is Torah's Moshe. Two of them are God's. The first two of these Ten Commandments, Anochi Hashem and Lo Yeh, I'm the Lord your God that took you out of the land of Egypt, and you shall have no other gods apart from me. We heard from him direct. The rest, the next 611, you heard from Moses. Torah 611. The first two are his. You heard that mouth to mouth, and it'll kill you. Now, what he wanted to do was give over all 613 like that. The truth was, the Medrash says in Shemois, he had more than 613. He had more than 613 to give, but we ran away from Mount Sinai like kids running away from Cheder when the bell rings. It's a Medrash Rabba. Obviously, God's infinite. There's loads of more mitzvahs he could give us. Infinite. There's infinite ways of getting you to God's prop. But he saw that Klal Yisrael was saturated at Tariag. They were literally, that was it. There's more ways to get close to it. But I can see, you know, when ding, 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 and they said, woohoo, we're all here. Do you know how much we just did today? It was like enough. But God was very happy to give them all 613. They said, we simply can't take this divine revelation. They said, Moshe, you get it, and we'll listen to you. When Moshe turned up, by the way, Hashem had said, if only they'd always act with such reverence. I'm very impressed. Even though I'm happy to give them the rest of them, because they made a shlich and said, listen, this divine revelation is too intense. We have to have reverence for this kind of all-being. We want to do through a shlich. He was extremely happy with that. Think about it. Imagine I'm trying to talk to the flatlanders, Lahavdil, right? and I'm talking to them all. And I say, my name is Mitchell. And they go, Mitchell. You know, they always kind of meditate on that. I quite like the idea of it, if you want to try it. So they're all doing that. And it, to the point that it kills them all. And then I resurrect them because I haven't got the power to do it. They say, listen, you know that bloke Pete that you're really close with and stuff? This is too intense, man. Just you talk to Pete, we'll believe what Pete tells us. But it had to be a mass revelation. It had to be everyone was there. God said, I have to be talking to you. It wasn't as if there was some bloke in a forest with a magic pair of goggles that was told by an angel, I can marry as many women as I want and no one can marry anyone unless I say so. Which is exactly how Mormonism started. And the magic goggles have gone and the angels have gone and the two tablets are gone and I never saw them again. But you just have to trust me. It doesn't work like that. Everyone was there. Every single man, woman and child got that. Yes, that level of revelation was very intense. And that doesn't mean that had they have trained themselves, they couldn't have survived it. If you got to level where that's Ruggle for you, I do that every day, then you would have survived. But no one was Ruggle at that level. You understand what I'm saying? It's special, special, super level. Because when he has attained prophecy, he has attained the highest. There's a T in there that should not be there. You can scrub the letter T. It's not heightest. There is attained the highest possible level of attachment to God himself. The revelation of God's glory is what gives rise to all that is contained in a prophetic experience. Through this tissue box, through the aspiclaris of the lenses. The revelation working upon the power of imagination. Now, how long did we discuss imagination when we talked about dreams? Imagination is the most fundamental human experience. It's never off. From the moment you're born, Dimion, imagination, kicks in and stays on until the moment you're dead. That's it. It's on all the time. You dream through it. It's on when you're asleep. It's not on when you're in coma. It's not when you're in coma. But it's on all the time. Now, the process of imagination is what? I had a wonderful... I was giving a shiur in Mezrich. Sorry, in Mezhibuch. Mezhibuch in the Ukraine 2 weeks ago, where I was at the kever of the Baal Shem Tov HaKodesh, which was the originator of the Hasidic movement. And I was there talking about the concept of Dimyon. And people asked me, what is Dimyon? What is imagination? Yeah? So I said, imagine you've got a plug. You know, like a plug socket? We had a plug socket right there. Yeah? Like a European plug socket. So imagine opening it up and finding it's just full of bananas. You're plugging into bananas. And there's a screw here. And I unscrewed the screw. And instead of a thread on the screw, it was a sausage. Crazy, right? Like a cartoon, like Tom and Jerry kind of stuff. You know, like, there's bananas. Mm. Now, how does this work? You have a concept of bananas. The yellow, curvy fruit that looks, smells, and tastes like a particular fruit. And you have a concept of plugs. What's real is plugs stay with plugs, bananas stay with bananas. But the imagination, Dimion, is able to bolt concepts together that don't generally coexist. A screw is a piece of metal with a thread that drives into something and holds itself. It bites onto it. It is not a screw head with a sausage on the end. But you've got the concept of a meat product in a casing that is very nice when it's fried. And you've got the concept of a screw. When you bolt those two concepts together, the tools you use in your mind to do that are powered by imagination, by Dimion. Dimion is a construct where you can take abstract concepts, join them together in ways where they don't naturally fit only by physical laws and properties, which is more the realm of knowledge, and you can bolt them together in unusual ways. You need, when the neshama talks down into the nefesh bahamis, which is a brain, it can't say, listen, I've just seen what's going on in the mainframe, let me relay it to you. It has aspiclaries of its own. It's got consciousness levels of its own. So it will turn to and go, wow, man, I've got to tell you about these things. But when it tells you about this, it can't tell you about the things in the way that it saw it. It has to tell you about things in a way that it can understand. So imagine I was given cosmic clearance. Cosmic clearance. And I can open all the pieces of paper in Whitehall and then, you know, and then MI5 and MI6 and NSA and FBI and CIA. Everything was in front of me for a week. And I read up about, I don't know, terrible human experiments that were done for the atomic bomb. Yeah, that's what I read up about. I mean, really bad, like things that they don't want you to know. Like they would put people in front of them and like fry them and stuff like that. Terrible, terrible things. And I read it all, right? And then I read the reason they did that was for something totally different. The reason they did that was actually to see whether or not they could travel through time. That was actually what it was. Let's say I read that. And it was all really bizarre, and they had bizarre, you know, maths in there involved with time travel. And then I come back, and I want to tell someone who has absolutely no access to any form of secret data whatsoever. A standard regular Joe that has no secret confidentiality of anything at all, right? And I say to them, you know, what's going on? I'd have to bring it down in very low basic terms. I don't know about time bombs, I don't know about history. They're kids, they don't know what's going on. You have to start talking to them in a way. Imagine, you go, how do you explain an atomic bomb? Like, it's like, you know, you take uranium or plutonium and then you basically bring it until it reaches a critical mass and you do it very, very fast. And then the reaction happens where it gives off a tremendous amount of heat. Now, how do you tell that to a kid? You'd have to say, imagine, I don't know, there was a ball of fire. You'd have to really bring it down into like imaginative concepts. That's what the neshama has to do to the kid, to your human consciousness. It has to work on imagination. The revelation has to work on the power of imagination in the prophet's nefesh. In the nefesh, notice he changes the lashon. Before we said on the page 217, as a result of this attachment of the soul, and he translates that as neshama. Now the neshama comes down all the way bottom down to the nefesh. So the neshama has to start talking to the nefesh. You see the difference? How are you with me on this picture? The neshama is over here and the nefesh is down there. So the neshama has to stop talking about the nefesh bahamas, about the animal soul. It's got to talk down to an animalistic soul. So it has to use the facilitator of imagination. It's everyone. That's how the prophetic experience actually works. Leading to images and concepts forced upon it by the power of the revelation. It's going to start talking about tissue boxes as much as it can understand. The imagination, however, does not initiate anything on its own. You should know that there's a Haftira where we learn out that a malach was speaking to a prophet, an angel was speaking to a prophet, and the malach says, "What do you see?" And the prophet says, "I see a menorah with a golden bowl on the top." And the angel says, "Oh, that's brilliant. Very good, you've seen well." What's going on there? This should all make perfect sense now. There's an Aspergillaria set, and the malach that he's talking to is the last Aspergillaria. There's a lens set, and he's literally, the last lens is saying, "Now, what are you getting in this?" I know what I'm getting. Because I'm Clive's lens. I know what I got from Andy, and Andy knows what he got from Howard, and Howard knows what he got from Leo. Leo knows what he got from Adrian. Adrian certainly knows what he got from Dovey. And Dovey was there! Are you with me? So Clive, as it were, the Clive level angel in this set says, "Can I ask, Mr. Stablo Boss, what are you getting?" So he says, I can tell you what I'm seeing according to my concept of imagination is like a candelabrum with a bowl of oil on the top. Wow, that's just what I see too. You must be seeing very well because you haven't distorted what I'm sending. That's excellent. You see that? Because he's got to ask the Stablo Boss's top level consciousness, his consciousness, how are you taking this data in? So look, if I'm going to want to tell someone about that, going back to my analogy, tell someone about the atom bomb, right? And I want to tell a kid about it, and it's just too complicated to explain the actual physics of it. So I start talking about, and I say to him, "Right, now talk back to me. Tell me what I've said. What am I talking about?" He says, "You know, I've listened very carefully to what you said. I think you're talking about some kind of bomb." Whoa, you are! And that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's exactly, you got it. You got all those managers on, you're getting it. Your brain's working very well. If he turns around and says, "Are you talking about the Smurfs?" "Oh man, we need to start again. You know, I've given you the revelation. I've tried to explain it to you, but you just aren't holding to. You aren't grasping it. Are you with me?" These images, in turn, conveyed to the prophet's actual consciousness on a regular daily basis ideas and information whose concepts, whose conception comes from the power that was revealed by God's glory, i.e. in the original prophetic revelation at the top level with the tissue box. The subject remains fixed in the prophet's mind. He remembers what he saw the tissue box be, just a tissue or the whole box, depending upon whether he's in East Africa or in London. And when he returns to his normal, regular, doing his taxes state, that knowledge is retained with perfect clarity. He doesn't have to be in the prophetic revelation to see it. He's got it. He's got what he can get out of that in a conscious state. This is the idea of prophecy in general. But there are very many degrees, as Richard pointed out. There's lots of different black belts, right, that we should discuss presently. The highest possible level ever obtainable is that of Moshe Rabbeinu, regarding whom the Torah actually testifies in Devarim, Lamed Daled 34, Yud 10, there will never again arise a prophet in Israel like Moshe, who knew God face to face. Let me just close with it. Richard, we just talked about what he just said, that there are very many different degrees of prophecy. I just want to, very, very important, if I just very, very quickly turn to Shemois, Perek Zayin, the 7th chapter of Exodus. If I can get it. I'm in Parshas Vayera. Okay? I'm in an art scroll Chumash here, and I want, the redemption's going to begin. This mamish for Pesach, no? What happens? God said, I'm Hashem, speak to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, everything that I speak to you. Moses said before Hashem, behold, I've sealed his lips. You've sealed my lips. How shall Pharaoh heed me? I'm scared because I've got a speech impediment. I can't say per or ber. I've got a labial speech impediment. It's going to go wrong. I'm not going to be able to speak to him properly. I can't speak. I have a problem. I have a stammer, whatever the problem is. 7th chapter of Vayera. Listen to this now. You've got to read it in the Hebrew. Listen to this. And listen to how the translation is not accurate. Listen to this. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. To respond to this problem of the fact that Moshe says, listen, I can't do this because I have an actual physical impediment. What do you want from me? It's like asking a guy without legs to be a hurdle jumper. What do you want from me? You're asking me to be an orator? He says, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Okay, I'm going to respond to you. Re'ei, see now. Nesaticha Elokim leFero. I have made you an Elokim leFero, to Pharaoh. V'aharon and Aaron, achicha, your brother, yihyeh nivi'echa. And Aaron, your brother, will be your navi. Let's read the Art Scroll Happy Friendly Translation. And then we're going to talk about how that's not the standard rich translation that you will tell kids and stuff like that before you start. The translation that our Rabbi Art Scroll gives is the follow. Hashem said to Moses, see, I have made you a master to Pharaoh. What's the Hebrew word for master? Baal or Adam. Not Elohim. I've made you a master to Pharaoh, and Aaron, your brother, shall be your spokesperson. I get it. I get why you're saying that, but I'm not a happy bunny. This is how it should have been translated. We'll learn why you can't translate it like this, because it's just too intense. Hashem said to Moses, saying, see, perceive. When you're telling me you can't speak, don't you get this? See now what we're talking about. I have made you a God, an angel class being in respect to Pharaoh, the human being. And Aaron, your brother, will be your prophet. Nivi'echa, another is a pro. What's he done to him? Hold up your lenses. Hold up your lenses. Now we said, very good. Now we said, Mr. Stabler, okay, you get all three, Leon, because you get bonus, because you're amazing. Now, Stabler Boss is the prophet, right? He is the prophet. You get with me, right? Now, Here's the prophet. So the prophet turns round to the boss and says, but I can't go to Pharaoh because I can't speak properly. So God turns round to Stanley and says, you aren't speaking anything. What did he do to him? He made him an Elohim class being. I'm going to need another. So this is another prophet, okay? There's another prophet. So what did he do to him? Can I swap this? I'm going to promote you to Aspaclaria level. You are going to be like the last angel in the run. You will be part of the prophetic experience itself. You won't be the prophet, but Aaron Nevi'echa will be your prophet. You will be, so it'll go from David to Adrian to Leon to Howard to Andy to Moshe. And Moshe will actually be part of the chain. I'm going to make you an Elohim class being, and I'm going to elevate you to the level of angel. And then you'll talk to Aaron in the same way that an angel would talk to a regular prophet who receives this. Which means I have to have you in a totally different state. And Aaron over here will get this thing, and he'll interface with Pharaoh. You therefore cannot, absolutely cannot, clump him, that prophet who has been moved over to the Elohim class being, with any other prophet that has ever, will ever exist. Because that doesn't happen. God doesn't do that. He uses Aspaclaria, lens, prophet, lens, prophet. And then in his case, lens, Moshe, prophet. No one ever had that done before. No one ever had that done later. So you can't say, oh, who's the greatest prophet? And you bundle all the prophets together. You got to do it. Oh, Moses, he just stood up. He's a little bit taller than the rest. No, he wasn't tall. He was totally, qualitatively, quantitatively, utterly different from anyone who predated him or anyone who came after him. Because he wasn't a regular prophet. He was an end-stage prophetic class being itself. Aaron was the prophet. That's why, by the way, if I want to... Daniel wrote a book. What do we call that book? The book of? Yonah wrote a book. What do we call that? The scroll or the book of? Yonah. Okay. Habakkuk wrote a book. What do we call that? The book of? Habakkuk. Okay. Shmuel wrote a book. What do we call that? Jeremiah wrote a book. What do we call that? Moses wrote a book. What do we call that? We don't call it the book of Moses. Again, the point is we don't call it that. You don't say, get me a Sefer Moshe off the shelf. The reason is because he's not in it.
So Mordecai wrote a book and we called it.
Mordecai, that's different. That's different. Well, I can get to it. Wasn't, first of all, he didn't write a book. And Megillah's not one of the prophetic books. And Megillah isn't. It's done by Ruach HaKodesh, not done by Nevuah. It's not done by. It's not Nevuah.
Yeah.
Tehillim wasn't written. It's not Nevuah. We're talking that club. It's unfair to class Moses with anyone else. He simply was a different species. It's not fair. He was different. That's why, by the way, he was the humblest man who ever lived. He needed to be utterly egoless. We'd send him for therapy if he came to you. He's just, I can't do it. Why must he be that way? Because we want a clear lens. And what's the lens? The ego, the mind. His mind was so clear, he didn't even see himself. That's exactly what you want when you're going to get a prophet to give over the Torah. That's why Moshe argued with God for 7 days at the burning bush. And he said, I don't want to go. They've got to just get on with it. Why? Because no one else can do it. Because I've made you for purpose. You are the special neshama, which is cleared of itself. I can elevate you up to Elohim class being, and you can function. If you took Mitch up to Elohim class being, Mitch has an ego, he's going to taint things. The problem with that is the toe won't come over clearly. I need absolute precision. There can be no room for error in the giving the toe. It's got to be perfect. I need someone who can deal with that. You're the only man for the job. I made you for this. And of course he's saying, but of course I can't do it. You wanted to. If you turn around and go, yeah. No, in fact, I got to say, you picked a good guy. Because you know there are quite a few people and I think I'm really up for the top. He's the wrong bloke. If he's so ego-bound, if he's a lens, he's going to colour the picture that comes through that lens. He's the wrong man for the job. Because we need the Chumash to be absolutely pristine. Because it's the source core of data for everything else. Do you see what's happening here? That Pasuk now makes sense. I'm going to promote you to an Aspaclaria being. And the regular prophet in the regular channel prophets will be Aaron. But if you translate that in an old scroll Chumash, you're going to get the wrong end of the stick. Listen to me as to why it's right they've done it the way we've done it. Now let me go back to our scroll side. If you do it correctly and say, and God said to Moses, see, I've made you an angel class being to Pharaoh, and Aaron will be your prophet. People read this and think, oh, Moses wasn't human. They'll get the wrong end of the stick. That's not true. He was highly unusual. But if you translate it like that, you'll miss the point. So they have to translate it in a way that you get the point. In your in-depth understanding of Torah learning, you'll get the replete message. But you can't tell a kid that, you know, Moses was elevated up to an Elohim class being, and therefore he was like an Aspaclaria. You mean Moses the lens? People just, they don't understand what that means. What does it mean Moses was a lens? Obviously that's... It's true, he was, but you can't give that over. That can't be translated in a basic standard English translation like that. Because you'll give people the wrong idea. Because they don't understand this. They don't understand how the prophetic experience works. They haven't just had an hour, you know, coaching them through time. That was an hour to understand one pasuk in the Torah. You got one pasuk clear. One pasuk. Hour and a half of work for one verse. You did not understand that verse before you came here. Now you've got one. You can say, I've got one verse. At least a shot, basic, simple understanding of that one verse. That's all. Nothing deeper than that. Just, I'm getting it. I'm online with it. All that data cashes in for that. People don't know what prophecy is. They don't understand it. They hear the term. They misappropriate it all the time. You people now know what prophecy is according to the Jewish tradition, which means you have a responsibility. Someone asks you, you got to tell them. If they bring it up in conversation and they say, listen, oh, that's a load of nonsense. Actually, it's not nonsense. Or prophecy is this and that. Actually, it isn't. Did I tell you I had an 18-year-old student? 18-year-old student in Israel. 18-year-old. And he was in yeshiva, and a Rosh Yeshiva came, while I was in Israel, I was teaching this, and a Rosh Yeshiva from Israel, another yeshiva, was canvassing to take on Bochum of that age to his yeshiva because he needed Bochum in the yeshiva. He's canvassing. So he walked up to the bimur and he gave a drosha to impress them with who he is and his Torah. You should come and learn by me. Mamish, a straight up advert. It really happened. It happens all the time. So you get Bochum and they go, where am I going to go next? What am I going to do? And a Rosh Yeshiva came in and he gave a shit. And everyone attended. Everyone attended, of that age, of that group that he was selling towards, basically. Gave a shiur, trying to impress him. Wow, this is a really a special person. I'm going to hear his yeshiva. And of course, then he can have more, you know, alumni and make the yeshiva bigger. That's how it works. My student was there. And I'd learned this with him. He was sitting in the back. Very unassuming looking young man. Very, very unassuming. He's wearing corduroys and plaid shirt. Just really chilled out guy. But he had this down. So the Rosh Yeshiva was there and he was talking, the shmooze hit the concept of prophecy. He started talking about that, whatever, in his talk. Mamish mashah, unbelievable. And he turned around and said, now prophecy, let me tell you, prophecy is when God talks to you. So this guy, this 18-year-old guy, put up his hand in the back of the room. And he goes, yep. He goes, excuse me, Rabbi, I'm sorry, I don't mean, isn't prophecy just a heightened state of consciousness that isn't necessarily dependent upon the fact that God has to communicate with you during that time? So the Rosh Yeshiva, who could have just swept it aside, stopped, he paused, he thought about it, and he said, you're absolutely right, you're quite right, I'm sorry, I got it wrong. Later that day, that young man was in the laundry room of the yeshiva doing his laundry. And a couple of other guys who were also in the yeshiva needed to do their laundry as well. You had to buy tokens to use the laundry machine. So the laundry machine has like these special tokens you have to put in, you have to pay for them. So they were buying tokens and stuff like that, trading tokens. They were in there and they said, hey, you know, they turned around to this guy and said, I was there today and I heard what you said to the Russia. Isn't that pretty intense? I mean, isn't that pretty big? I mean, he got the definition of prophecy wrong. He goes, was it right for you to say that? And he goes, you could tell the greatness of the Rosh Hashiva, the fact that he backed down and he accepted it. Torah is true from wherever you hear it from. If it's Torah, it's true. If it ain't Torah, it ain't true. Doesn't matter where you get it from. Moshe Rabbeinu took it from Yisro, who was a pope. He was the pope. Came to his son-in-law and said, I think you're doing this wrong. He should have said, does your face do this? Yeah, did you do that? You've been up in the mountain 40 days, 40 nights? You in Egypt? I think so. With respect, sit back, take a seat, enjoy a mint, and I'm running shop. Can I be in charge for a while? I think that would be perfectly acceptable. The Pope coming in, telling the Rav how to fish their dish. How to feed dish. I'm going to tell... No! You know what he said? Okay. I hear you. If it's right, it's right, right? It's Emes is Emes. The Rosh Hashiva took it. But the Rosh Hashiva got it wrong! Because this is a misunderstood topic. You now have this topic. What we're going to talk about next time is how the experience occurs, how to get it, and the preparation that the neophyte needs to get to those levels. It's been an honor to address you. I hope you have a wonderful Purim.